IVM
Public policy affects every aspect of your life, from the roads near your home and the lakes in your city, to education and health, to international trade and foreign policy. If you want to understand this interplay of politics, economics, polity and governance, Takshashila Institution's public policy courses are made just for you. The 12-week graduate certificate program gives you a window into the basics of public policy. You can choose to explore the areas of defense and foreign affairs, tech and policy, or advanced public policy. The course is completely online and is conducted on weekends, making it a perfect fit for working professionals. The applications for the May 2024 cohort are now open. Visit school.takshashila.org.in. For more information, visit www.school.takshashila.org.in or click the link in the show notes.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello, welcome to today's podcast. My name is Sridhar Krishna, and I've got my colleagues here, Shreya Ramakrishnan and Anushka Saxena. Welcome to today's podcast, both of you.
Hi, Sridhar. It's great to be here.
Hi, thanks.
So all three of us work at Takshashila Institution in Bangalore, and we've been talking about this topic for a bit now. And there is this persistent belief amongst many that if you don't have children, you'll regret it eventually and may die alone, or in a home with 30 starving cats, right? So there is this view. Yet the data shows that many do not share this view. There is a global decline in fertility rates since 1950. And in the past, people had many more children than they have today. So I'd like to have a conversation with the two of you to try and understand what's been going on. Has the total fertility rate been going down? How much has it gone down by? And why do people have children at all, or why are people having fewer children today? So who'd like to start? You did some research, Shreya, on some data around the declining fertility rates. Do you want to give us a summary of that?
Sounds good, Sridhar. Thanks for that very vivid image in our heads. But just to talk about some numbers from India, right? So the fertility rate, which is total births per women in India, has been going down steadily from 5.9 in 1960 to 2 in 2021. And according to a Ministry of Statistics and Program Implementation report, in the four-year period from 2016 to 2020, the age-specific fertility rate has also been going down for the age groups of 20 to 24. It's gone down from 135 to 113. And for the age groups of 25 to 29, it's gone down from 166 to 139. So that's a 21.4 and 26.4 percentage drop, respectively. And for the same period, the age-specific fertility rate for the ages 35 to 39 has increased from 32 to 35. Mm-hmm. So this suggests there's an overall fall in fertility rates and also a shift in the age of women having kids in India.
So does that also hold? Is there a big difference between different states when it comes to TFR? Is TFR higher in some states and lower in others?
Right. Yeah, just talking about states and regions, when we look at numbers across these states, Bihar has the highest fertility rate at 3%, which is above the national average of 2%. Tamil Nadu is at the bottom after Delhi and West Bengal. Interestingly, most of the southern states are below the national average and they're at the lower end of that range.
Yeah. So Anushka, do you have some perspective on why this might be the case? Why is there disparity between different states when it comes to TFR?
Right. So those are some really interesting numbers, Shreya and Sridhar, because a lot of the discussion surrounding fertility rate has to do with correlation, even if not causality. And a lot of the things actually contribute to that correlation, right? So of course, if you'd look at the data on age groups, for example, what that tells me is for the decline in numbers for the age groups of 20 to 24, it could be because of factors like a decreased sense of maybe pressure from, say, family to have to get married at an early age and have kids, which again will be a function of generation and time. And at the same time, also correlates with the data vis-a-vis an increasing number of women enrolled in higher education programs. And the age 20 to 24 is about the time when women choose to pursue higher degrees like bachelor's, master's and PhD or post-graduation programs, right? So with education almost across every kind of parameter from age to state to even beyond borders and countries, we see that the more the emphasis on education, the lesser there is a pressure and a sense of need to kind of have children, right? And then consequently, you see this data of age groups or the numbers declining for younger ages between, say, 20 to 26, translating into higher birth rates between the ages of 30 and 35, right? Because then may perhaps be the time when endeavors in education or income stability finally give over and you feel like you're at that stage where you can, you know, afford to have children or even want to have children, right? So that's definitely, I think, where I see the correlation taking place. And in India, especially in various states, that may specifically be the case. But of course, you know, you'll see that disparity of numbers between states because, and again, this can be a factor of education and income because you'd see Bihar as a state where the levels of education, especially for women, would be relatively lesser. The overall population ratio between men and women in states like Bihar and Haryana would be lesser, right? Yeah.
So would you also say that states which are more affluent have fewer children? Is that also true?
Yeah.
Why would that be the case? I mean, I would just think, I mean, you talked about affordability as one criteria and why people choose to have children. I mean, it is expensive to have kids, right? But then by that logic, don't you think like, you know, once you become more affluent, you may end up having more children, but that doesn't seem to be the case. What could be the reason for that?
That's an interesting question. I have to mirror some of what Anushka said in that while there is a shift in the age group, so that the age group of 25 to 29, where there are a lot of women in the labor force with income generation and everything, it seems like affluence is also on a spectrum. No, I feel like women possibly are taking a longer time on that process. And which is why I feel like the 32 to 35 age group sees an increase in women having children. I think it remains to be seen what the connections with affluence.
If you look at developed countries, if you look at, I make the connection with affluence because, I mean, if you look at the data in India, the TFR in the more affluent states seems to be lower than the TFR in the less affluent ones. Now, there is also, if you look at developed countries across the world, except the US, most of them have TFR below replacement rate of 2.1. Well, you look at the case of Japan. I think like Anushka, you and I were talking about Japan a little while back also. And like, but that seems to be the case that like higher the level of affluence. So while I don't know if it's true that within a particular state or country, whether affluent people have less children than less affluent ones. That I don't know. Do you have some data on that or any understanding of what that could be or why that could be the case?
Yeah, I think I echo Shreya's comments about affluence being a spectrum and I would rather use the phrase income stability and conflate that with the level of savings to kind of correlate why perhaps more affluent or countries with a higher per capita income or states with a higher per capita income have a lesser or a declining TFR. And I think the reason for that would be, despite the population being lower in their states, despite there being governmental pressure in some of these countries like Japan or China, we'd see that people want to have lesser children would be because you'll find that both parents are working. And childcare is unaffordable or for most of them, income stability would come at a cost of continued working hours, spending much more on buying a house or daily needs and not being then able to afford a nanny or afford regular childcare. And especially if you look at China's case, for example, not only are you seeing a declining TFR, even as per capita income may say be much higher than India's, but you're also seeing housing prices shooting up rapidly, right? You're seeing this happen in Japan or even in Indonesia, right? Then with the prices of daily commodities or assets that you have to invest in for sustenance shooting up, you see much less emphasis on the willingness to spend money on childcare and child rearing, right? Then that would mean that affluence as a product of high savings or high inherited wealth would yield different results than affluence that is a product of continued working hours and the strive for income stability. And I think that is an important factor that can...
That's
distinction is very interesting.
Yeah, it is a very interesting distinction that you make between this. Yeah. And so you're saying that, let's say there was a family where there's one person working, the other person stays at home and is a caregiver, they're more likely to have children than those. And if they lived in a country where real estate, it was not so expensive to own a home, then they are more likely to have children than those where both people are working and there are working long hours, etc. And I think the case in South Korea is a good example, right?
Yeah.
So South Korea has that situation where both people have to go to work. It's a country where economic development has been very rapid. So they don't have access to great inherited wealth. Most couples who are affluent today are those who have gone on to earn the money themselves. But they've done so by working long hours. And I think it's also a country which is similar to India in that men do very little household work.
Exactly.
So having a child would be a greater burden on the woman in such countries than they would be in a country like in Scandinavia, where the chances are that men and women do fair share of domestic work.
Exactly. And of course, Scandinavian countries would also be those that have much advanced and progressive laws on equality of childcare pay. So these would be countries that would be exceptional in that they would have compulsory paternity leaves, equal pay for staying back at home for mothers when they're off of work, taking care of their child. But like you said, countries like South Korea and India perhaps may not. And India, as we know for a fact, does it, right? So in such a situation, with both the lack thereof for enabling women to have children and the existence of demand-side problems vis-a-vis, not problems per se, but factors such as emancipation of women, more education, the need for income stability, freedom of income and equality.
But that doesn't seem to change the fact that TFR in Scandinavian countries, even though they have all these progressive laws, they don't seem to have had a significant impact. I mean, because it's still very low there,
mm-hmm.
right? So the correlation, but I think maybe... if the TFR is low, then the government looks at interventions like having more progressive laws as a means of raising it. It might not have been a consequence of that. It could be an intervention that the government is attempting to fix that. Anything else you'd like to add on this, Shreya?
No, this is definitely interesting. I'm also just thinking about what has changed recently in India, right? When we look at the labor force participation rates, I'm just trying to contrast that with the fertility rates as well. If we're looking at labor force numbers from 2016, 2017, all up till 2020, it hasn't increased all that much. It has gone up only after 2020. So that's also something I'm thinking about, because the numbers we spoke about initially were also for the same period. There has been a dip in fertility rates in the period from 2016 to 2020. So I'm just contrasting both these numbers and just trying to also with, you know, some of these global trends and just seeing what that means for us.
I think there is, so I was listening to Alice Evans speak about this and many others who have spoken on this, and they said, like in India, when it comes to women's labor force participation, it's followed a sort of hockey stick approach in some sense, right? In the sense that as a per capita income rises, I mean, when it's very low, women go out to work. But as the per capita income rises, the traditional norms in homes sort of kicks in. And people say, now we earn enough money, so now the women in our home don't need to go out and work. And that's been a huge factor in various communities and various places, where at least in urban India, where like women's participation rate has been quite low, right? At least in the far fields, women just went out and worked. And that sort of varies based on rice-growing areas versus wheat-growing areas. Rice-growing areas are much more labor-intensive and therefore women are co-opted into the workforce, while in wheat-growing areas, it's less labor-intensive, therefore women are asked to stay. So there is this whole thing about affluence and family honor and various other things which seem to be playing a role in determining whether women are able to go to work or not. But at the same time, I think that might be the difference between South Korea and India, in my opinion, where their women's labor force participation rate is very high. But they may still not choose to have children because of reasons that Anushka pointed out. But there the problem is, like women are saying, that they have agency. They're not, but they don't have enough ability to make the men do more work in the home. But they're at least able to decide that they will go to work and not choose to have children. It's a fast-growing economy that the cost of living has risen quite considerably. So it'll be very hard for people to manage if like only one person was going to work. So in that kind of situation is what has happened in South Korea. So, yeah, that's different. Shall we switch a little bit and look at Japan? Why are people so worried about total fertility rate? Can we look at Japan and they've had a significant decrease in TFR over the years. They have very rapidly aging population. What has been the effect on their economy and everything else?
Right. So I think Japan is very interesting in that there is definitely an emphasis on requiring a significantly increased amount of talent for a lot of the technological and high quality production that they're now shifting gears towards. There is a shift towards expansion of military capabilities, towards education in fields of high growth. And all of these are a product of what we refer to at Takshashila as creative insecurity, right? Once you've achieved a certain level of development and provision of a quality life for most of your citizens, you want to do things that require high quality, productive and growth, right? Something that we're also seeing China shifting towards, even though most of its population isn't necessarily middle income, right? And with that emphasis on employment and increase in productivity and growth in Japan, the fact that the population is declining because of similar reasons, such as our chunk of the female population being educated and having income agency over income and employment, we're seeing that they're choosing not to have kids increasingly. In fact, we've seen some of the protests from women in the past few years being a result of governmental emphasis on having kids, right? And they see it fundamentally as violative of their agency. And that is also why we're now seeing the government make a policy shift towards wanting more immigration. That is becoming an emphasis in Japan. Some of the European countries, although they still seem that they're contrasted with Japan in that they still seem to be very hesitant to open the doors to immigration.
Yeah.
And in the US, we also see the slightly increasing TFR as a product of their openness to immigration, right? So they may not necessarily.
Yeah, while they're much more in the news, they're actually much more open to immigration than most other countries.
Right, exactly. So in a way, Japan also then becomes a case study as to how a government may then want to use immigration as a policy tool to combat or maybe to address the challenge of balancing a declining TFR and the need for more talent and productivity in the country.
Correct. I mean, if you look at GDP, it's a product of your labor force productivity multiplied and the number of workers in the workforce. And now, if the number of workforce is declining, you have a situation where your GDP you have a recession. And you would have like years of recession if you're unable to replace it, unless you're able to increase productivity at a rate higher than the decrease in the population.
Exactly.
Right? And there is a limit to how that has been possible. And then providing services, there's a huge shortage of care workers in Japan, on account of an aging population. I think that's something to worry about. But I think there's always been a resistance to immigration.
Right.
Because a different group of people come into your country, the way of life is different, it affects the way you're living today. But in a world which is more open to new ideas and more liberal and more progressive, such things should not matter. But large parts of the world are not so in their way of looking. So I think that's another reason why people who are wary of change should consider having mobility.
Right.
Yeah. Do you want to add something to that, Shreya?
It's just similar to what Sridhar was talking about Japan and Anushka was talking about Japan and South Korea earlier. Culturally, I feel like there are a lot of similarities between for India, between both of these cultures. So do we also want to talk about maybe some of the similarities are setting in more now as we grow? And no, I think the important bit in all of these is norms, right?
and norms change over time. So in India, we've maybe seen the emphasis on having kids, let's say, between the ages of 20 to 24 to be a norm. I know that's a thing in my family, especially in the generations previously. But those norms are changing with, you know, economic and social security factors. And at the same time, there will still be developing countries. So again, immigration again is a norm, right? How you talked about, some countries are not more open to it, despite the fact that they have a declining TFR. And a lot of it has to do with norms, especially among those that consider themselves native to a certain country, right? Similarly, we see norms in developing countries like Timor-Leste, for example, where the TFR is pretty high. It's around 4, 4.5, right? And the reason for that is that there is a norm that there is a need to rebuild the population. And that is, again, a product of economic and conflict-related factors, because till 2009, they faced ethnic conflicts and from at the hands of Indonesia and internal civil strife as well. And so their emphasis has been to rebuild that population because they need a strong sense of community within Timor-Leste, and because they've bear the brunt of conflict. And again, now, I think, like continuing with the example of Timor-Leste, there's a sense in that community that they've been able to rebuild that population because the TFR has gone down from 7.9 in, say, 90s and early 2000s to now 4.34. But it still remains high than, like you said, the replacement rate of 2.1. So I think we should move on with some of the discussion on the cultural aspirations.
And I think so. I think that's also, I remember a time when, like my family, I come from a very large family. I have 45 first cousins.
Right? Wow.
Okay. But even there, I mean, my father was one of 11, but only seven of them, so that means he and six other siblings, lived long enough to have children. Four of them died before they could have children. So there was a lot of infant mortality in the past. And don't you think that might have also contributed to the fact that people had more children in the past than they have today?
Totally. I think that's been a strong reason why that's been the case in the past, and that's changing now. So I'm wondering if that also has played a part in people deciding, women particularly deciding to have lesser children or a later date as well. Also, family structures themselves seem to have changed quite a bit, at least in some parts of urban India. And I wonder how that affects the entire having children situation. Women are still not getting a lot of support from men in a lot of cases. Families are becoming more nuclear. I think overpopulation is also something that's often cited by individuals as more of a problem and less of a positive thing for the country and its growth and progress. Environmental issues is on top of everyone's mind a lot of the time. So I think a lot of these issues play into each other in conversations and social groups. And I just also think that that could be one of the reasons that people cite for not having kids. It remains to be seen how true that is in reality.
Yeah.
You know, that's an interesting point, Shreya. But I'd say that, you know, thinking about the pressure having more children in an overpopulated state or country and how that would impact our environment or the resources, you know, how they say we've borrowed the earth from the next generation, not necessarily inherited from our past one. I think that thought is only very recent, and in some of the more urban and, like we said, affluent populations. I think it's a privilege that some families are now thinking of climate-related concerns or resource pressures as one of the reasons why they won't have children.
Yeah.
And why I also say that is like a privilege and a product of education or maybe income is also because you'd see that, and this combines with the point you were making, Sridhar, earlier about mortality. You'd see some of the states or even countries that are farming-oriented not really care about the resource pressure that having more children would have. And instead of making a bigger labor, creating a force that can continue to help them on farmlands or in the manufacturing sector or prime sector jobs. This is not just visible in countries with overpopulation or states with overpopulation, but also in countries like Bhutan, right? Where there is a declining fertility rate and a smaller population of about 700,000-800,000 people. But you'd see the disparity between families that are more income and as secondary and tertiary workforce oriented versus families that are primary sector dependent. Like, so a lot of the farming families in Bhutan will continue to emphasize having more children, while the former group won't, right? And that's the reason.
I think it's also, Madhu, I like your point on this children adding to your workforce and your farm. I think it's also a product of affluence. I think when you're not so affluent, you look at your children as your sort of retirement plan in some sense, right? So you look at it and say that I have uncertain income, but if I have four or five children, the chances are that at least two of them will do well and be able to send me a little money with which I can manage in my old age. And we have a farm, and the farm has enough food, like you said. There's always not going to be a shortage of food. So if you can feed three children, you can probably feed four children or five children as well. And so it's a combination of, like, you know, whether you're at a primary sector job, but also a combination of, I think, also the fact that if you're not so affluent, then you look at your children as a retirement. But I think maybe that also ceased to be the case by the time, I mean, I'm much older than you two are, but even if by the time, like, even came to me, I don't think my parents, my daughter, I had 45 first cousins. My daughter has three, right? So that's the kind of situation it is. And it's a quick draw. And this quick drop sort of could be explained by the fact that our parents didn't look at us as their retirement plan.
Yeah,
in the same way.
Yeah.
And that could also lead to fewer children.
Yeah. So I think if we just want to quickly wrap this episode up, I think we should all maybe conclude by talking about, in a summary, three factors that may perhaps, both in the Indian and the global context, prevent women from or have women hesitate to have children, versus three factors that perhaps may be contributing to high total fertility rates in some of the countries. And then for some of the countries where TFR may be a concern, how do the factors that enable women to have children, how can they play out in the policy ecosystem? So just quick comments on that, Sridhar.
Yeah. So from what I'm hearing from both of you, as well as whatever I've read, I think as people become more affluent, they don't look at their children as their retirement plan. So that's one big reason for why more affluent nations have fewer children. And as India becomes more affluent, and it has become significantly more affluent in the last few decades, and so that leads to us. The second thing is about education. I think, like, you know, access to contraception, education, spacing of children, things like that. I think those are all things, a result of education. So I think that also leads to it. And I think people are also, when you think more and you say, man, this is a lot of effort to have a child, so maybe I shouldn't. And I think this environment and, like, you know, people's concern that, like, you know, as human beings, we seem to have taken over the planet and we need to some way and not add to the pressure. I think people who are in a position of privilege seem to be thinking that. So I think that's what I think. I think the other thing which could change some of these reasons, I think men in India, definitely we don't do enough at home. And my generation may be better than the previous one, but I think the current generation is far better than in my generation and all of us. And I think, like, you know, if men contribute more to our unpaid housework, then I think there are chances that you might revive the replacement rate properly. And yeah, so I think that's the big one that I can think of.
Yeah, I echo your thoughts completely, Sridhar. I also think it's got a lot to do with your own personal social groups. I also feel somewhere women's aspirations have also changed slightly in small and big ways. Having children is not the most automatic thing that comes to mind when, like, how marriage was many years back. That's not how women are thinking about children, is my estimation of it too. And I also think men and women today are thinking more deeply about it. Like you said, they're probably thinking about it a lot, and maybe they're over-engineering it. I'm not sure. And there also seems to be, just with more income available, there also seems to be more options of engaging oneself with travel. I mean, I'm sure people who have kids will argue that they're not the same, they're not comparable on any level, but that's probably how they feel as well.
Yes. I think I completely agree with you on the point that now having children for many women, and of course that's a product of income stability, higher education, and the availability of options pertaining to health and guidance pertaining to health, we're seeing that women are now looking at having children as a choice and not necessarily
as a mandatory function that you're supposed to do.
Exactly. And as you said, same with education, same with marriage, and same with having children. Which is why for me personally, maybe the choice to have children sometime in the future is a product of the feeling that it would add meaning to my life after a certain point of time. And that perhaps is reflective of the fact that now I can choose or choose not to have children. Right? And of course, we've all, you know, summed up good points, but also to just reiterate, the health factor becomes really important, because for those for whom out-of-pocket expenditures on health, maybe because of governmental policy or because of income, might not be an option, child rearing becomes tougher. But for those that have greater access to healthcare and more affordable access to healthcare, not only does child rearing become easy, it then also adds the factor of child rearing being a choice, because you can then choose to have it naturally or other available options like IVF. And of course, that this becomes a discussion for a later date. But yes, some really interesting factors. And as to the policy solutions, as Sridhar, you pointed out, of course, having men contribute at home may be more of a social factor, something that maybe a policy solution cannot work to. But for countries that may be looking at expanding on TFR, paternity leave would be something really interesting. Pay for women while they stay at home and take care of children would be something, of course, because then job security becomes a concern, right? What will happen to my job if I have to stay at home for those 6 months? And yeah, of course, there's a whole gamut of policy options available, which also depends on social and cultural context aspirations. But remains to be seen what happens to TFR trends, and would be interesting to continuously monitor them across parameters.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. I think it's been a great conversation. And I think the good thing is you all have choice on whether to have children or not, which is great.
That's right. And the choice to have 30 starving cats as well. So, yeah. Okay. On that note, thank you, Sridhar, Shreya, for your insights. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into another episode of All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs. Check us out at our Twitter handle at TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.